I'm Afshin Ratansi and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE. Today marks 62 years since the UK-US-EU armed jailing of Nelson Mandela, imprisoned between 62 and 1990 after a CIA covert operation in South Africa. Mandela in 1997 said, "We know too well that our freedom is incomplete without the freedom of the Palestinians." Today, as billions of dollars worth of weapons from the European Union, the UK and principal sponsor of Israel, the USA, are dropped on Gaza to exterminate Palestinians, superpowers Russia and China are focusing their attentions on a possible wider US-Israel, maybe nuclear war. Targets include Lebanon, Syria, Yemen and Iran, regardless of who wins November's US elections. Joining me now from Washington, D.C. is Omar Badar, a member of the National Policy Council of the Arab American Institute. Omar, thanks so much for coming on. I should say we're recording this interview before the events of the weekend. Tomorrow is also 79 years since the USA detonated a nuclear bomb in Hiroshima. What do you think? Do you think there are any messianic elements in Israel that think that they can resort to the nuclear weapons at Dimona base or control the Dimona base, given how much they seem to be possibly losing in a war, any war against Lebanon, Iran, Yemen, Syria, Russia, China, who knows who else?
I think you're putting your finger exactly on the terrifying prospect of where this could end, because right now we are set up in a confrontation after a series of extremely provocative actions by the Israeli government, sort of complete and total disregard for international law, complete and total disregard for any possibility of peace talks or tampering down the situation in the region. I mean, we've seen just a series of assassinations at this point. And it's all leading us towards a major confrontation that is of unknown consequences. I mean, certainly, if this thing gets out of hand, it could lead not figuratively, but literally to the deaths of millions of people in the region. And the question becomes, is if at the end of all this, Israel finds itself backed into a corner, what is the possibility of them using nuclear weapons? I don't think that's an absurd question. I mean, there is a level of lack of rationality in the Israeli government so far. Just to kind of appreciate where we are and why we're here, Israel would rather burn the entire region to the ground than allow Palestinians basic human rights and allow them to live in freedom and dignity. That is why we're here. This has been the case for decades. It's an apartheid government that has treated Palestinians like garbage and denied them their most fundamental freedoms and insisted that they live a life without dignity, where their lands can be stolen and their water can be taken away. And when there was a natural reaction to that, this is not defending it, but just saying that this is a natural consequence of people being held without freedom for a very long time, and people kind of counterattack, then Israel used that as justification to commit massacres. And every bit of pressure that has built up towards ending Israel's genocide in Gaza, Israel has responded to with further escalation. So we are not dealing with a rational government that is trying to engage in a way where it wants to coexist as an equal in the region. Israel is insisting on regional dominance, and if that means endless killing and death in order to maintain that dominance, this is the path they've actually gone on for.
Of course, what you said about Israel there is not a view that's shared by any of the correspondents on the so-called mainstream media networks in the United States and in NATO nation capitals. But do you think there is some kind of growing recognition of what you just said? There seem to be doubt actually cast on the Israeli account of the Majd al-Shams attack, as if Hezbollah, Lebanese resistance, would attack Arabs in occupied Golan Heights. There seems to be doubts about the ceasefire deal that they stand there at the podium of the State Department talking about after the US, UK, EU weapons were used to kill the main negotiator for Hamas. That ceasefire that the Biden administration has been trumpeting.
Yeah, the whole thing is kind of a charade. You have an Israeli government that so far has just shown absolute and total in lack of interest in kind of settling the situation, right? We've had a series, you know, when you talk about the attack that took place in the Golan Heights, occupied Golan Heights, Syrian kids who were killed by that rocket, which remains mysterious. We're not sure who launched it. We're not sure if it was an accident. We're not sure if it's some group that did not know how to aim rockets, or if it's an errant Israeli Iron Dome missile that misfired or something. There's just no adequate information. And the one thing that we do know is that the Israeli government lies constantly. We know that they have repeatedly lied about an endless set of issues to try to justify either ongoing occupation or to justify even further atrocities. We all remember when Palestinian American Al Jazeera journalist Shireen Abu Akleh was killed. Initially, the Israeli government said that it was Palestinians who killed her. And then finally they said, okay, fine, we did it, but it was an accident. And thorough investigation showed that she was actually targeted by a sniper, which means she was deliberately shot by the Israeli military. And you can go on with a million examples, including, by the way, the events that took place on October 7th, that there have been certain, as if what happened on October 7th was not bad enough, the Israeli government engaged in inflammatory exaggerations as a means of justifying what was going to follow. And I think that this is very similar, that we are in a moment right now where there's this mysterious rocket that killed 12 kids who are playing soccer. And I think all Israel saw this as a useful justification to launch further aggression and spread this war beyond, because it feels like such a sympathetic incident that would then merit a response. But ultimately, we know that Israel does not care about the Syrian kids in the Golan Heights, because a government that has killed 16,000 Palestinian children in Gaza cannot possibly care about the lives of children. That's not a serious motivation. That's not something that actually comes into the moral calculus when Israel is about to act. And they see this just simply as an opportunity to expand their aggressive action. And the question that remains is, what is the U.S. doing through all of this? And it seems to be essentially giving Israel a green light to just carry on pushing the entire region to a cliff instead of doing what is just basic, minimal, not just moral decency, but strategic common sense, which is to say that we need more stability in that region. And that means reining in the country that is currently engaged in genocide and that has we have this potential for a regional explosion beyond anything that we've ever imagined, because this genocide has not been stopped and nobody's doing anything meaningful to actually put it to an end.
Why do you say seems to be a green light? Because that seems to be speculation by some critics that you hear on so-called mainstream media, when to most of the world, rather than blaming Israel, I mean, arguably, Netanyahu's playing a hand masterfully here. Every move he makes puts him further and further away from prison where he would go for corruption. And it isn't really Israel doing this, is it? It is the United States doing this.
Yes and no. In a way, I think the United States, obviously Israel and Netanyahu would not be able to do anything that he's doing without full U.S. backing. And that has been fundamentally the problem here. The issue is, what is the motivation on the American side? Is it just the default towards deferring to Israel and letting them call the shots?
Wait, Omar, you saw in Congress the 52 ovations for Netanyahu. Isn't it clear that the entire Congress, except with a few honorable exceptions, wants to exterminate all the Palestinians?
Yeah, I mean, again, the effect of what you're saying is correct, right? They are standing up and applauding a war criminal who is engaged in genocidal violence in Gaza.
They're applauding his words.
Yeah.
And he clearly says, more or less, that the extermination of the Palestinian people is what's in store.
I think the people that serve in the American Congress are operating under an outdated mindset. It is a default that the Arabs are the other, including the Palestinians, and that Israel are the ones who are like us. And there has been extensive influence from the Israel lobby for many, many years in America. So part of this is about domestic politics. It's about the financial influence of groups like AIPAC, who are spending $100 million in this election to try to sway congressional seats in their favor. They've successfully ousted Jamal Bowman recently, who was a critic of Israeli policy, by dumping something like $15 million into his race, in support of his opponent and against him. So there is that aspect of it. And there is also the aspect of the fact that a significant portion of the American population is evangelical Christian. And for them, there is a messianic view that somehow a religious duty to support Israel, right or wrong. And that motivates American politicians to some extent, who are always more interested in their own political power and maintaining their positions in Congress than they are in promoting actually good policy. And I think that that's part of the calculus here, is that what we're trying to beg effectively the American political establishment is to stop looking for your own personal narrow interests and think about the fate of the world and what is right and what is wrong. And this pretense.
But
this
that is what they say. You know, some would say that Kamala Harris doesn't even need the millions of dollars from AIPAC, because actually these people believe in the fate of the world, which is that the Palestinians will all be exterminated. What do you make of Blinken immediately saying, yeah, this was definitely Lebanon that killed Arabs? Of course, in CNN, they were Israelis somehow. It was Blinken and Lloyd Austin immediately saying, well, whatever happens in Beirut doesn't really matter. And, you know, violating Iranian airspace, whatever. At least they implied those things.
Yeah, this is a subtle difference that I think is worth hitting on. There's a difference between having disregard for the lives of Palestinians and Lebanese and others and actively wanting them to be exterminated. So I think it would be a stretch to say that people in the American political establishment actively want to see the extermination of Palestinians. But there is a level of disregard that they're watching Israel do it and they don't care. And that ought to be infuriating. And it puts, you know, throws all the sloganeering about the American administration about putting human rights first and an international law based order and all of this nonsense. It's just, it's all a charade. These are people who are interested in their own power, in spreading the power of the United States. And right now they feel that between their own domestic political interests, in their view, by the way, mistakenly, I should say, that they ought to continue supporting what Israel does. That is an outdated view based on the way politics used to be. There's a significant shift in American public opinion right now. Young people throughout the country oppose what Israel is doing. They want to cut off military funding for Israel. They want an end to this genocide and a ceasefire in Gaza. And yet the political establishment is not responsive to this shift. I think whenever you have shifts happen in a country, the last part that actually changes is the political establishment. So we're beginning to see the roots of some change. And I think it's going to have to be that politicians who support this genocide, these genocidal policies, paying a political cost come election day in order for them to realize that they have to correct course. And until that happens, at this point, they're just sticking their heads in the sand. Young people get their information through social media. They don't rely on legacy corporate media. And that's why they get information that is actually accurate. And it leads to the obvious conclusion. Israel is an apartheid state. It is engaging in genocide. And there should not be another penny spent on a country that behaves that way. We should have complete and total cutoff of weapons and money to Israel. Until Israel starts behaving like a normal country rather than a rogue state, we have to stop saying that Israel gets to be a country that is above the law and above any rules and does what it wants. And once that change happens, then we can actually see a prospect for a better future for both Israelis and Palestinians. And that would then move U.S. policy in line with the rhetoric that we're constantly proud of about talking about freedom and democracy and human rights and all of that nonsense that just has not really effectively looked, like it has any semblance to the reality of American policy. That contradiction has to be resolved.
Omar Badr, I'll stop you there. More from the member of the National Policy Council of the Arab American Institute after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the Arab American Institute National Policy Council member, Omar Badr. Omar, you were talking about the cognitive dissonance, I suppose, between those who govern and the governed in the United States. Clear the polls show that the American people want a ceasefire, regardless of the applause for Netanyahu. But then what will the elite class do in your country? Will they crack down even harder than they already have done? I saw the pepper spray at the demonstrations against Netanyahu's visit when he gave his speech to both houses of Congress. We saw, of course, the campus protests and the heavy-handed police violence, some people invoking Kent State and Vietnam.
Yeah, it's a really shameful chapter in American history right now that I have no doubt that future generations will look back in the same way that we've looked back at many previous shameful chapters of American history in which the conscience of this country has stood up to say no to existing policy and they've been faced with repression. And this is a repeat of that. You know, we have this fantasy that we're past that period. Whenever you talk about historical atrocities, whenever you talk about slavery and the genocide of Native Americans and segregation and the internment of Japanese Americans and the Vietnam War and the list goes on and on, there's always this sense that these are things that surely we know better now. And if they were to happen again, we would not react to them the same way. And yet here we are once again in a particularly ugly and distasteful phase in which we are watching Palestinians get starved to death and murdered in the tens of thousands in Gaza, all of it funded by American money and supported with American policy and diplomatic protection for Israel. And the people who are standing up to that, young people on college campuses, who are raising their voices and saying no to this are indeed the voice of, are the voice of conscience in this country. And yes, we are stuck in this really bizarre reality where the political elite, I mean, you may have even seen it when they were applauding Netanyahu, a foreign war criminal was attacking American college students about their protests, and you had American lawmakers applauding a foreign war criminal who is attacking their own students. It's such an ugly and distasteful reality that exists right now. And it's, you would want to shake these people and wake them up now to say, don't you see what is happening? And don't you see how history is going to look back at this moment? But unfortunately, it looks like the way we evolve is not as seamless as we would like to imagine. And it unfortunately will be a lot more death and carnage before this country comes to its senses and realize that we are heading down the wrong path and that a corrective is needed. But it's always been about people rising up and demanding that change. People have never changed their policies from the top down. It has always changed from the bottom up when people of conscience have made it untenable for governments to continue down with policies that are completely monstrous and indefensible, that we've achieved change through that.
Yes, Netanyahu said that the demonstrations were somehow involved with the Iranian government, redolent of how Trump's campaign was somehow Russian. Except that time is arguably running out on all of this, isn't it? I mean, what do you think? Do you think Netanyahu got the green light when he met with Kamala Harris and Joe Biden on that visit to Congress? He also went to see Trump in Mar-a-Lago, got the green light from him. And then there was, just before the spate of assassinations, there was the head of the CIA meeting in Rome with the head of Mossad. I mean, is this a concerted attempt at widening the war, even as the, is it Blinken, who knows who runs the White House at the moment, actually denies it to the so-called mainstream media?
Yeah, there's, I think what Netanyahu is doing here is calling the American administration's bluff. He understands that the Biden administration would rather calm things down. They're not interested in a regional conflict. But he also knows that the Biden administration is never going to do anything meaningful to hold Israel back. So basically, they have meetings and the Biden administration says, we would rather you not escalate and maybe don't...
But why do you think that's the case when the Biden administration is in the receipt of so much money from APAC? I mean, they... Yeah. That's, I mean, surely before November, it'd be quite good for the Biden administration to see chaos, warfare and catastrophe here and somehow make out that Kamala Harris is some kind of wartime leader, isn't it? Wouldn't it be good for them?
If you listen to the contrast in speeches of sort of the way Trump has been talking, Trump has insisted that the reason why there is all this chaos is because he's not president and because Biden is the one who's president. And if it were him, he can achieve calm. And I think that instigated, I mean, you could see it in the shift in the way that Biden was talking about what is happening in Gaza from the beginning until later on when it was clear that there was significant public discontent with it. At first, he did what every American politician does. Israel has the right to defend itself. We fully endorse what they're doing. And then as that opposition started building and we saw that this thing was not actually resonating with the American public, that public opinion, especially on the Democratic side, is breaking with this policy, Biden started talking about how Israel is engaging in indiscriminate bombing in Gaza.
Some people said that was a gaffe. I mean, and all that was stopped was one 2,000-pound bomb shipment. There was nothing. There was no change.
It can't be a gaffe. It cannot be a gaffe because it's not a one-off. There's been a repeated pattern of Biden raising objections, which means that at least rhetorically, he's uncomfortable with the fact that the U.S. is seen as fully endorsing everything that Israel is doing.
You mean again, optics while he still funds the genocide?
Precisely. Well, I think, again, we're not disagreeing here. He's uncomfortable with it, but not willing to go as far as to actually
I don't understand him. Well, who cares about his rhetoric and so on while the heads are being dismembered of children in Gaza by his bombs?
Which tells you what the current, which is what I'm trying to allude to here. The dynamic is that Netanyahu is able to disregard objections from the United States about his policies because he knows that the Biden administration lacks the backbone to stand up to Netanyahu in any meaningful sense. So who cares, to your point, who cares if they're telling him that he needs to tamp things down and not bomb Beirut and not look for escalation with Iran, if at the end of the day, the U.S. is going to keep handing out the money and the weapons for Israel to do whatever it wants? That's why we're here. And the call is, it's an appeal to the American political establishment to understand the folly of their approach. This idea that you can achieve regional peace and stability through just giving Israel whatever it wants and never questioning it and never challenging it that has not worked. That has been a recipe for endless regional conflict and death, and frankly, one that puts even U.S. interests in the region in harm's way. And if we are serious about being interested in a more stable region, in a region in which the U.S. can have better relations with the region and so on, you have to head towards de-escalation. That means reining Netanyahu in, reining that apartheid genocidal government in, putting a stop to their behavior by saying not another penny as long as you behave that way. And in the long term, like in the short term, you need that ceasefire. But in the long term, you cannot achieve regional peace without addressing the issue of Palestinians being denied freedom.
Okay, well, I don't think there's going to be any of that happening because neither of the two parties are going to do that. So how will the American elites and how will the American people respond when U.S. assets are now targeted? Because obviously under international law, Lebanon and Iran can now respond. What happens to all these U.S. bases dotted around West Asia when they start getting attacked and U.S. servicemen and women start getting killed on a scale much larger than that by Ansar Allah from Yemen?
That is a horrifying prospect. That is effectively what we're looking at, is the possibility of a major regional war that Iran is engaged in directly, that the U.S. is engaged in directly, and who knows what the consequences of that will be. It is nothing but death and destruction with completely uncertain long-term future. But
will it mean that the political class has doubled down? I'm just seeing what will the reaction be? Will they double down then on their Zionism, as it were?
We've seen this happen time and time again. We've seen it in the history of Vietnam is very telling. I think initially, in the face of something like that, there is an incentive to double down and rally around the flag and push even harder and stronger. It is only in the long term, when this ends up being costly in a protracted way, does the U.S. realize that things maybe have been done the wrong way. It took 20 years for us to realize that we made a mistake in Afghanistan and to pull out, only for the Taliban to come back and take power again. Unfortunately, if history teaches us any lesson, is that people don't react well to military confrontations quickly. Wiser and calmer minds don't always reign in those moments. People who are calling for retaliation and response and violence and strength, those tend to be the people who rise to the top and take the reins of things. But as this becomes a protracted problem, that's where we might see the potential for a shift in policy. And it would be incredibly tragic not to learn that lesson sooner, to say before things escalate to that point, before things get completely out of hand, we ought to have the foresight to see where this is heading and to put a stop to it before it ends there and to look for meaningful de-escalation.
Well, viewers will note that you mentioned Vietnam, which, of course, the United States lost, obviously, after huge amounts of carnage in Indochina. What sort of tunnel vision is there in Washington? Do they even know that there was a Beijing declaration uniting Hamas with the PLO and Fatah and the PFLP and all the other Palestinian groups, that all of these people were in Moscow, that there are huge configurative changes going on in the global south as regards support for the Palestinian struggle?
I'm sure they're aware of the fact of how this is changing on the global front, although that particular agreement, there's a question of how meaningful that specific agreement is when it comes to Palestinian factions, because ultimately the Palestinian Authority that exists in the West Bank exists because the U.S. and Israel allow it to exist. And at any point that the U.S. and Israel cut off support for it, I think that authority would collapse. So it's, to say that there's going to be meaningful unity between Fatah and Hamas, there are limits to that because they have patrons who are on the opposite sides of this broader...
Clearly, but at least we saw the head of Fatah mourn the death of Ismail Haniyeh, which is something one would never normally have ever expected, anyone who's followed what's been happening in this region.
Yeah. I think some of that is about domestic consumption more than anything else. They feel that they have to make certain statements. But unfortunately, I think we're stuck between a rock and a hard place with Palestinian leadership. It's not looking particularly optimistic anywhere at this point. And certainly with the Palestinian Authority, there is a sense of impotence, that what is the point of an authority whose only function right now is effectively to make the occupation easier for Israel, to run administrative tasks in the Palestinian areas, to run schools and collect garbage, but not really being part of any meaningful effort towards liberating Palestine from Israeli occupation. That's not on the table. All they call for is, peace talks and whatever. Like, it's all in the sense that somehow we can just talk our way out of the situation that we're in, when it clearly requires a more cohesive strategy. And that authority is beholden to You know, if they were to challenge Israel meaningfully, that Palestinian Authority would instantly cease to exist. Because if Israel cuts off any support, and if they treat the current Palestinian Authority the way they treated it when it was under Yasser Arafat, you remember the besiegement of Arafat compound in Ramallah, the killing of, you know, they actually invaded his compound on multiple occasions. That's when you put yourself in that situation under occupation, and your existence depends on the occupiers allowing you to exist and live and have the privileges that you do. That is not a recipe for a meaningful leadership that can actually lead the Palestinians out of the situation that they are in.
A view clearly reflected by all polls in Palestinian territories, occupied and unoccupied. So do you think it will be, though, through Beijing or Moscow that this is solved, now that Washington is so clearly part of the war, the wider war, that all these other countries are now ranged against?
Again, it's very, very difficult to imagine what the future holds right now. I don't know what that path even looks like. What does it mean when you have Israel as the regional power in the Middle East that is backed by the world's superpower in the United States, giving it unlimited military weapons to do whatever it wants, and Israel is a nuclear armed state? I don't know how this ends well. I don't know what a solution even looks like at this point, unless either the U.S. reins Israel in some way. And since that's not on the table in the short term, then we are headed towards almost imminent conflict. And we have to see what that shapes up on the other side of just untold death and carnage that I just wish we had the foresight to work our way out of. But I guess we'll have to wait and see how other powers react and what kind of constraints they may be able to introduce in order to hold us back from the brink.
Omar Bader, thank you.
Thank you.
And that's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those bereaved by the UK-US EU-armed genocide in Gaza. We'll be back on Saturday with a senior US officer turned whistleblower who held two of the highest enlisted leadership positions in the US Air Force and Pentagon. He claims and names an alleged Israeli spy at the highest levels of US government. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.